Chapter 13, How I Was Discovered. Around 1998, I started working on what would become my first solo record, 7th Avenue. Sweet little old lady and her husband at my hood church gave me $2,000 to record and press the album, which I planned on giving away in my youth ministry and also in the streets. At least that was the plan. The problem was I spent all the money on the recording itself. In other words, I went way over budget. All the while, I'm still working at the church as an inner city youth pastor, barely scraping up enough money to pay rent and food. Little by little, though, I was feeling restless. I was ready for the next chapter to start. I felt like hip-hop was what I was supposed to be doing full-time. But it's not something that could just happen overnight. It just doesn't work that way. There's no training program for me to go off to with potential job placement of full-time rapper coming afterward. God had to do something to make it a reality. And at that time in 1998, all I wanted to do was go out and share my faith through my music. I just didn't know how it was going to happen. I ran out of money making my first record. While working at the church made me about $7.50 an hour, I didn't have the money to press the tapes and give them away, which was the reason why I was given the money in the first place. I remember sitting in my apartment frustrated, not knowing what to do, racking my brain trying to figure out what the next step should be. Then I felt that still small voice telling me to be obedient and to step out on faith, trusting that God would provide. I shared this with my wife. Subsequently, that turned into a pretty intense argument about finances in the future. Her point was we didn't have the money to afford it. She kept asking how I'm going to pay for that music career. And I just sat there, dejected. I felt like a failure. I felt like I let my wife down, as well as the people who invested in me. I hadn't accomplished what I was supposed to do. She walked out. It was a tense moment that I'll never forget. And then just a few minutes later, she walked right back in. She looked me in the eye and she said, "If God told you to do it, then do it." And that was all I needed to hear. So I put the money on a credit card and I threw caution to the wind. Around this time, I was thinking, I should probably get a record deal. That would have enabled me to press the tapes up and give them away. It was almost like God was telling me, just trust him. Then he would give me everything I was looking for and so much more. I started sending out demos of the album to multiple record labels, including Goatee Records. They were in the mix for me because I had done a song with Tehran from Grits. When we cut that track, I got in contact with Goatee to get approval on the song. Truth be told, I was hoping somebody was going to hear it and give me a record deal. I just kept sending off demo tape after demo tape to a whole bunch of different record labels to the tune of zero response back. Nobody paid me any attention. No one was going to give me a deal. Again, I knew I was going to have to trust God. So I said I would press the record myself and trust that God would meet me halfway as I did this huge endeavor. I'll never forget sitting at the dinner table with my wife when my cell phone rang. And I rarely used my phone because it was so expensive. So when it rang, I paused. And I remember, clear as day, because I was eating chicken. All the things I remember. It was kind of greasy, but I answered the phone. On the other end was Todd Collins from Goatee Records. He said, "I just found your demo, and I really like to get to know you more." Todd co-owned the label with Joey Elwood and Toby Mac. I couldn't believe it. I came to find out years later he had actually been walking by an intern's office who was playing my demo tape. He didn't actually even go into the office at the time. Instead, he came back, took my demo to his car, and he listened to it. He liked it, and he called me on the spot. Now, I have to tell you that nobody really gets signed off of sending in a demo like that. It's incredibly rare. For him to call me and for this to actually happen in this sort of manner, there's no way to attribute it to anything else but divine appointment. The situation checked all the boxes of what I was looking for. He flew down and he met me, came to a couple shows and saw what I was doing in the inner city with the Project Kids. I took him on a tour through the hood and I showed him what I was all about. We kept in touch. But 1 month turned into 2 months. 2 months turned into three. 3 months turned into 4 months. This time began to get dragged out and I was becoming more and more frustrated. I thought I was going to get strung along and the deal would never come through. I waited nearly 6 months. If you can imagine being that close to your dream and yet still being so far, you can imagine how I felt. I was in agony. At one point, I remember Todd called me and point blank said, "Look, Goatee's not going to sign you. They're going to go with John Rubin over you." Then he said, "But I have a whole other record label I've been talking to and they want to get into Christian hip hop. They're a mainstream CCM label and they're called Essential Records." Essential had Jars of Clay, Third Day, and artists like that. He said, "They want you to be their first signing and they're going to come down and they're going to check you out." I was skeptical at first, but things moved fairly quickly. Within a couple months, I had actually signed the deal. A couple more months, and I'm up in Nashville living in a hotel for about a month straight, getting all the ducks in the row for the album to finally come out, which it did a couple months later. And then, within a couple months more of that, I got dropped by the label for low record sales. Did you catch all that? In 9 months total, I went from unsigned to signed to debuting my album to being dropped. My head was spinning. I mean, my shelf life was so short. The album came out in June and I was dropped by September. So much of my experience in this industry has been about getting really close and then fumbling. Then getting really close and then just fumbling. And then getting really close again. I spent about a year just struggling to get by and no record labels would touch me. They viewed me as a broken experiment. Then, out of nowhere, Tooth & Nail called me. They were a rock label. And Brandon Ebel, the owner, offered me a record deal that I couldn't turn down. He offered me what was called a non-exclusive deal, meaning I could sign with them and still sign with somebody else at the same time if I chose to. And I thought to myself, well, this will be something good that I'll do for now until I can get a bigger record deal. My second album, which was called Collaborations, was my first release on Tooth & Nail. That was the record Dear Slim was on. I had gone to every single Nashville CCM label with a carefully thought out plan for my second album. My plan was to switch up the image. My plan was to record Dear Slim. And I had a very clear idea of what I was going to do. Yet none of these CCM labels would touch me. It took a rock label out of Seattle that was known for putting out hardcore punk music that decided to gamble on me. And that gamble paid off with massive dividends. Then 3 years later, my first label, Essential, tried to re-sign me again. I promptly said no.